Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet
and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace, bliss, amen.
Well, tonight we have
Conquest of God, chapters 8 through 10. And we may play around a little bit more with how we work with this. I think we may be doing some more singing than we normally do. But we'll start with chapter 8. A little distance from the station, under a tree, were piled up some stones. Ram Dass, going up to the place, sat down on them and continued his meditation of Ram. It was past midday when another train arrived. Ram Dass, leaving the place, got up on the platform, nobody obstructing him at the gate this time, because this train was the right one for him to travel in. Here he came in touch with a sadhu who immediately took him up. Ram gave him another guide. Both entered the carriage. The new sadhu Ram was very solicitous. He asked him as to where he intended going. Ram Dass was perplexed at this question. The simple truth was, he did not know. He replied, "Ram knows, and since you are sent by Ram to guide him, you ought to know where he should go next." The sadhu Ram then said, "Well, I am taking you to Tirupulura, and thence to Trivannamalai." "As you please," replied Ram Dass. "You are Ram. Ram Dass follows you wherever you take him." Imagine for a minute that level of surrender. Now the train was running. On the front seat facing Ram Dass were seated two young Hindus, English educated. Both of them stared for some time at the strange, careless, and quaint sannyasi. That is Ram Dass in front of them. Then one of them remarked to the other in English. They thought that the sannyasi before them was ignorant of the English language. "Mark closely the sadhu facing us. He belongs, take my word, to a class of sannyasis who are perfect humbugs. The fellow has adopted this mode of life simply as a means of eking out his livelihood. This man is a veritable impostor and a hoax." This observation was highly approved of by the other party, who held a similar opinion of poor Ram Dass. They spoke something more, which he could not clearly catch, owing to the rolling sound of the running train. "Oh, Ram, how kind of thee to put Ram Dass in a situation in which he is made to hear himself spoken of in this matter." Instead of feeling annoyed, he sent up a prayer to Ram to bless the young men for their frankfulness. Further, Ram Dass could not resist the expression of his gratitude to these friends and thus addressed them with hands folded in salute. Oh, kind friends, it gives Ram Dass great pleasure to confess that he is in full agreement with the view you have expressed about him. It is perfectly true that he is a fraud. He has simply put on the robes of a sannyasi in order to find a living thereby. But one thing more you discover in him, and that is, he is mad of Ram, and every moment he cries out to him to make him pure and only live for Ram's sake. Besides, it is his humble presumption that Ram is taking him on this pilgrimage to purify him. This speech surprised both the friends, not so much on account of its import as the knowledge it brought them that the vagrant sannyasi could understand English and therefore had grasped the purport of their remarks, which were never intended to be known to him. A sudden change came over them, and both fell at his feet and sought his pardon for their thoughtless remarks, as they termed them. Thereafter, they became very solicitous and kind. They inquired if he had required anything to eat. This was a reminder to him that he had not tasted the whole of the day, a circumstance which he had entirely forgotten. He then told the two friends that he was mainly living upon fruits and would gladly accept any alms from them. After some consultation with the Sadhuram, the guide, they handed over to him some money for the purchase of fruits for Ram Dass. Ram's ways are kind indeed, inscrutable. He is all love and kindness. The learnings that Swami Muktananda points out from this chapter is to never judge on the basis of appearance. Be aware that there is a purpose behind the behavior of persons. Never let our reactions be based on impulses and judgments. When someone says something that is not agreeable or wounds us, which is not up to our expectations, do not rush to comment. Remember, it is a test. And rise above situations before reacting to them. I think about how Papa does that throughout this book and throughout his life. He takes everything as a gift from God. Everything, not even as a test, but as a delight from God. God has taken this particular interest to show interest in him in this way. And how can he grow? How can he learn? How can he develop by this situation that God has placed him in? And the second part that Swami Muktananda recommends, keep in mind the feelings of others while responding to situation. This will facilitate the emergence of a positive attitude in others. Peace has to be experienced from within. We can only facilitate its emergence. I'll read that again. Peace has to be experienced from within. We can only facilitate its emergence. And that goes both for ourselves and for others and people around us. So with that, let's facilitate a little peace by joining an ashramite and singing God's name, Ram Nam. This is, I think, Manju leading us in Ram Nam.
It is the
thank you.
The ashram, everyone's expected to sing and chant. They don't worry about people having good voices or bad voices. It's in fact, it's frowned upon to not sing if you don't have a good voice. It's seen as kind of vain that you would not want to chant loudly and lead people just because you don't have a voice that others might in the West would think of as high quality or well-trained, that you chant to God because you're called to chant to God, to draw closer to Him. So never be afraid of singing God's name. Chapter 9, Pondicherry and Trivandrumalai. In due course, Tri Papa Luri, I'm sorry, this name I don't know at all, was reached, and Ram Dass was taken by the Sadhu Ram to the house of an old relation of his, where on the veranda the night was spent. Next morning the Sadhu Ram advised him to go for alms to a few houses pointed out by him. "Look here, Maharaj," said the kind-hearted Sadhu Ram. "Money is wanted for your plantains and milk. Ordinary food can be easily procured, but for your food money is needed." He conducted Ram Dass to a street, both sides of which were studded with houses owned by Valkyils. "Go from house to house. They might give you something. I shall wait for you at the other corner," suggested the Sadhu Ram. Ram Dass, who was always at the bidding of his guide, did as he was directed. Begging at the door of about half a dozen houses, he got a handful of copper and other coins, which were all handed over to the Sadhu Ram, who on counting them found them to be about 10 annas. "Your Ram is very kind," remarked the Sadhu Ram, smiling. "This sum will do for 2 days." In the course of the day, there was a talk about Pondicherry, which Ram Dass came to know, lay only about a distance of 20 miles from Tirupulpulari. A desire sprang up in his mind to visit the place for the darshan of Sri Aurobindo, the great Bengali saint. The wish was expressed to the Sadhu Ram, and he agreed to it at once. The following morning, early before sunrise, both started, of course on foot, and went toward Pondicherry. At about 2 p.m., the outskirts of the city of Pondicherry were reached. The peculiarity here was that the entrance to the city was lined on both sides, a few yards from each other, by toddy shops. On entering the city, inquiries were made for the home or ashram in which St. Sri Aurobindo lived. After knocking about for some time, the gate of a palatial building was pointed at by a friend, wherein the sadhus were told the saint was residing. Entering, Ram Dass inquired of the two Bengalis, whom he met in one of the rooms at the entrance of the building, if St. Sri Aurobindo could be seen then. To this, one of them replied, "Sir, sorry, since Sri Aurobindo is in retirement, he will not give audiences to anybody for a year to come." Ram Dass then begged the favor of a mere sight of the great man which would satisfy him. Even this favor could not be granted. It was all Ram's wish. So he came out and explained the circumstances to the Sadhu Ram, who was waiting outside. While this was going on, a policeman was observed to be approaching the spot where the sadhus were standing. Coming up to them, the ubiquitous policeman said, "Friends, you are wanted at the police station. You have to follow me." At this, the Sadhu Ram was immediately frightened and pulled Ram Dass aside, whispering to him that most probably the policeman was taking them there to be flogged. Ram Dass suggested that they might accompany the policeman and leave the future in the hands of Ram. About half a mile's walk and the police station was reached, and the sadhus found themselves standing in front of a tall man of middle age with fierce looks and a well-curved and twisted mustache. He spoke something sternly which could not be grasped, for he must have done so in French. A reply in English was given by Ram Dass, and the man, who seemed to be a police inspector, simply stared in return to indicate that he did not understand what was spoken. Then a talk in Tamil ensued between him and the Sadhu Ram. The import of what the police inspector said was that only 2 hours were allowed for the sadhus to clear out of the city. At this, the Sadhu Ram remonstrated that after a walk of 20 miles at a stretch, the tired pilgrims required some rest, and they preferred to remain in the city for the night and leave the place next morning. This reply did not satisfy the inspector, but also appeared to have offended him a bit. For now he was talking fast, his eyes glistening and his hands twisting his mustache furiously. The allowance of 2 hours was reduced to 1 hour, and if they did not obey the orders promptly, he warned that they would be made to pay for it. This time the words he spoke were freely spiced here and there with some finely speckled epithets of abuse. The Sadhu Ram at once pressed Ram Dass to move away swiftly from that place for his very life. He was, poor man, both frightened and annoyed at the sharp words of the inspector. A few yards off the station, and the Sadhu Ram commenced to pour quite a shower of abuse on the inspector. No amount of persuasion on the part of Ram Dass for peace would stop the brisk play of his tongue. He was assured it was all Ram's wish, and so there was no reason to grumble. Still, he continued to give vent to choice epithets of abuse. He seemed to be quite a master in that line. For about a mile, the Sadhu Ram's wrath did not cool down. Gradually, he became silent, maybe due to exhaustion of his stock of vocabulary, or on account of an empty stomach, or it might have been all a trick of Ram to test Ram Dass if he would join him in the game set on foot by him. Ram Dass alone knows, and he alone can judge. Retracing about 4 miles from the city of Pondicherry, the Sadhu Ram selected the veranda of a shop which was shut for taking rest for the night. Early following morning, they started on their return journey, which place they reached at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Here it should be stated that the Sadaram was looking after him so tenderly that he was a veritable foster mother to him. Again, it was all Ram's work, whose ways are at once loving and mysterious. Next day, the train carried both the sadhus to Tiruvannamalai. Here, the Sadaram conducted him to the house of a goldsmith with whom he was acquainted. The goldsmith was a pious man. He pressed both the sadhus to remain in his house as guests. For some days, Ram Dass occupied a closed veranda in this friend's house for his meditation and rest. In the mornings and evenings, he, along with the Sadaram, would go to the huge temple of Mahadev. One day, the kind Sadaram took him for the darshan of a famous saint of the place named Sri Ramana Maharshi. His ashram was at the foot of the Tiruvannamalai Mountains. It was a thatched shed. Both the visitors entered the ashram, and meeting the saint, fell prostrate at his holy feet. It was really a blessed place where the great man lived. He was young, but there was on his face a calmness, and his large eyes a passionless look of tenderness, which cast a spell of peace and joy on all those who came to him. Ram Dass was informed that the saint knew English, so he addressed him thus, "Maharaj, here stands before thee a humble slave. Have pity on him. His only prayer to thee is to give him thy blessing." The Maharaj, turning his beautiful eyes toward Ram Dass and looking intently for a few minutes in his eyes, as though he was pouring into Ram Dass's blessing through those orbs, shook his head to say he had blessed. A thrill of inexhaustible joy coursed through the frame of Ram Dass, his whole body quivering like a leaf in the breeze. O Ram, what a love is thine! Bidding farewell to the Mahatma, the Sadhu Ram and he returned to the goldsmith's residence. This description that Papa gives was what I was yearning for. That look that would transform us, that touch of the saint that brings the joy and peace that never, never fails, that never leaves us. And Swami Satchidananda gave me such a look that I felt known completely. He caught my eye and held my attention, gazed into my eyes, and I never felt so seen, so loved, that he saw every single inch of my being, every dark place, every nook and cranny, everything that I thought had been hidden and completely filled me with love, knowing all those things. And it was in that moment that I knew what God's love felt like. And it washed away every morsel of shame that I had ever felt. Every time I had ever felt like I wasn't worthy of this life, of love, of existence, was cleansed away, knowing that God, coming through Swamiji's eyes, knew all of that and loved me completely anyway. That sense of omniscience of God and the love that comes with it has never left me. I felt that in other measures from David, and that grew and grew as I was willing to open myself to that love from Guru. And it's something that's available to all of us. It doesn't have to come from the eyes of a saint. It simply requires us to surrender to the possibility that God already knows everything that we are, everything that we've done, every place that we've been, every failure, every success, and loves us with a love that we can't even imagine. We can allow that to just seep into us. It can come through a touch. It can come through a thought. It can come through hearing the words of a great one before or after they've left the body. But God is trying to speak to us in that way constantly. He speaks to me that way when I look up and see an eagle in the tree, when I look out and see the amazing sunsets that he presents for us. He keeps reminding me that each time I look, he's created that scene just for my eyes. In that moment, everything that's there that I'm witnessing through my eyes, he's created just for me. And he does that for each of us. Our whole lives, each moment, each second, each cell is created just for our own existence, for our own growth, so that we may come back to him. And Papa knew that. He set out on this journey to prove to himself that. Swami Muktananda's ideas to take from this chapter. Self-effacement is absolutely necessary. Unless and until I test whether the self-effacement is total, it will only be an academic exercise. Begging for alms is the height of self-effacement, the real test of self-effacement. And for those of us that are in the West and are householders, it's the idea of, can we truly believe that everything comes from God to us? Our jobs, our salaries, our bank account is simply a manifestation of God. Whether we've worked for it or it's been given to us, it's come to us from the source of all supply. And so we take it, each thing, as a gift from God. Each anna is the smallest money in India. Imagine if each penny that we spent, each dollar that we spent, we took it with the gratitude, whether we earned it by the sweat of our brow or were given it. We took each dollar the same way that Papa rejoices with each anna that's dropped in the cup for him. That we have compassion for and empathize with the receiver while we are giving. And that's another way to be God in this world, to feel God in this world, is that as we give, so shall we receive. And so when we're called on to share, to do that with empathy and awareness of the receiver. Second point, maintaining equanimity, even when efforts to achieve the goal are thwarted. So intensely pray for peace of mind when adverse circumstances prevent the accomplishment of an objective. Know that it is a test. as to when they walked all the way to see Sri Aurobindo and were turned away, not even a sight, and then were chased out of town. Darshan of Mahatmas with an open heart and mind will transform you. Do not allow the ego to hold its sway while communing with Mahatmas. Allow their grace to flow into you and transform you. And Darshans of Saints is a reminder to subdue the ego. Finally for tonight, Chapter 10, In the Cave. Now at the prompting of Ram, Ram Das desires to remain in solitude for some time. Placing the matter before the Sadaram. The Sadaram was ever ready to fulfill his wishes. Losing no time, he took Ram Das up the mountain behind the great temple. Climbing high up, he showed him many caves. Of these, one small cave was selected for Ram Das, which he occupied the next day. In this cave, he lived for nearly a month in deep meditation of Ram. This was the first time he was taken by Ram into solitude for his bhajan. Now he felt most blissful sensations since he could here hold undisturbed communion with Ram. He was actually rolling in a sea of indescribable happiness. To fix the mind on that fountain of bliss, Ram means to experience pure joy. Once during the day, when he was lost in the madness of Ram meditation, he came out of the cave and found a man standing a little way from the mouth of the cave. Unconsciously, he ran up to him and locked him up in a fast embrace. This action on the part of Ram Das thoroughly frightened the friend, who thought that it was a madman who was behaving in this manner, and so was afraid of harm from him. It was true, he was mad. Yes, he was mad of Ram, but it was a harmless madness, which fact the visitor realized later. The irresistible attraction felt by him toward this friend was due to the perception of Ram in all. O Ram, thou art come, thou art come. With this thought, Ram Das had run up to him. At times he could feel driven to clasp in his arms the very trees and plants growing in the vicinity of the cave. Ram was attracting him from all directions. Oh, the mad and loving attraction of Ram. Oh, Ram, thou art love, light, and bliss. Thus passed his days in that cave. For food he would come down in the morning and, going into the city, beg from door to door and receive from the kind mothers of the place handfuls of rice in his small loda. When a loda was a little over half full, he would return to the cave. Collecting some dry twigs, he would light a fire over which he would boil the rice in the same loda. Water was at hand. A small stream of pure crystal water was flowing down the hill just in front of the cave. And in this stream, it was also most refreshing to take the daily bath. His boiled rice was taken to appease hunger without salt or anything else, and only once a day. To share with him in this simple fare, a number of squirrels would visit the cave. Fearlessly at times, they would eat from his hand. Their fellowship was also a source of great joy to Ram Das. Every day he would wander over the hills amidst the shrubs, trees, and rocks, a careless, thoughtless child of Ram. It was altogether a simple and happy life that he led in that mountain retreat. The kind-hearted Sadhu Ram would meet him every day, either up the hill or in the city, when he came down for bhikshas. A day came when he received Ram's command to leave the place. Where to, Ram alone knew. Swamiji's notes on In the Cave. Solitude, a must for sadhana. And it's interesting in our lineage Solitude is something that we take on a daily basis and maybe a monthly basis in small servings until God calls us to be taken out of the householder role. And if that call comes, God sees to it that all things are taken care of. And so we don't necessarily need to go looking for solitude, but we wait for that prompt. And when we hear that prompt, when we receive the prompt to draw inward, it's essential that we listen to that and make haste toward it, even if it's just in an afternoon. That we take that time for solitude, because when God calls us to that, it's because we're ready and he's willing and we're able. And so it's essential that we bid that calling when it comes. We try and force solitude as a exercise. It just becomes that. We say, oh, I'm going to take 2 weeks and go be in solitude. It certainly won't hurt us. It's nice to take time away and study God's words and spend time in seclusion. But what I'm talking about is that time when there's a command from within. As Papa got to first leave his home and his family, and then even withdraw from being a sadhu, wandering sadhu, and to take up residence in the cave for a month. God will assure that we're taken care of if we listen to these callings. Next, devise a method by which you can be to yourself so that you can consolidate all that has been given to you by God through various experiences. When taking up solitude, have clarity about the purpose for undertaking it and how to make the most from this endeavor. Perseverance is the keynote of success. Inner light makes you aware of who you really are. And of course, that's what we're looking for from solitude. Not so much to silence the mind, but to find the inner light. And in the quieted mind, God comes to us easily. This is another somewhat rousing Ravanam, but I think it's quite lovely, and it's led by a young woman. So we'll have another 5 minutes of Ramana. I'm going to interrupt it just for a second to remind people a wonderful way to practice Ramana, and what Papa taught was that we start by singing aloud. And then we bring it just to the mouth, where we're moving the tongue and singing what you might think of silently. And then, but the mouth is still moving. And then finally, we bring it all internally and we're silent with the Ram Nam. And so what we'll do is we'll sing, have Ram Nam out loud for 5 minutes. And then we'll just have quiet for a few minutes after that, and you can continue to sing Ram Nam mentally. Thank you.
Mentally.
from this place of peace, see the eyes of God looking into your own. Knowing every inch of you, every thought you've had, every thought you'll have, every notion, every action. And flooding his love into you, into your heart, heaped up, flowing over, filling you with joy beyond compare, knowing that you are love, God is love, you are He. Nothing can take that away. Nothing can sully it. Nothing can change that fact. God made you in love. Papa lived that truth and shone it on all around. Truth surges in every cell of our body. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Dearest Mother, our beloved David, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Oh. Oh. Peace. Bless. Amen. I think well. Our little group here will chant Om Shri Ram for our ending. Just chant with me. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri bless you.